This is Friday, the 25th of September, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. I'm in Washington. Coming up, Pope Francis brings his messages to the United Nations. You'll hear about it from VOA's UN correspondent, Margaret Bashir. President Obama welcomes China's president to the White House. But as you will hear, there are tensions behind the pomp and circumstance. And one day after the Pope spoke to the U.S. Congress here in Washington, one of its most powerful members has decided to step down. All of that and more is ahead. Welcome to International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. This has been and continues to be a very busy news day in the United States. Let's check in first with Margaret Bashir in New York after Pope Francis spoke at the United Nations headquarters in New York today. Let's go to New York where Margaret Bashir is there.
Hello, Ira.
Hello, Margaret. How are you?
What did
the Pope have to say and how did he say it?
Well, he had a lot to say. He said it in Spanish, and he made some very important points. He got a lot of applause, and he spoke mostly about the environment, a lot about sustainable development, because we're about to start a big sustainable development summit here. What he didn't speak about that I thought he might was the migration and refugee crisis in Europe. He didn't mention that, but he did mention it in the Congress yesterday, so maybe that's why he chose to focus on other themes today. But he also spoke a lot about inequality and poverty, and these lines got a lot of applause in the 193-member General Assembly, where there are many developing nations.
Could you discern what his overall, if you could just narrow it down, his overall message was to world leaders?
Oh, that's a tricky one. I would say take care of the environment. You're all responsible stewards for it. Take care of your people. You're responsible for them, too. And don't ever think any one country should have all the power. You know, nothing is absolute, sort of what he was saying. And, he was very emphatic about that.
What was the tone? I mean, you were there when Pope Benedict came to New York and again delivered a speech. What were some of the differences, if any, between the two popes?
Right. Well, Benedict came in 2008 to the UN General Assembly. It wasn't this time of year when the annual meetings are happening. It was, I think, in the summer. And it was certainly a well-received visit. People were enthusiastic, but it was nothing like today. For instance, the UN held a lottery for staff members. They had about 500 tickets for staff to stand in the lobby and along the corridors. Almost 5,000 people entered for 500 tickets. So it gives you an idea of sort of the enthusiasm, the excitement among staff. Also, Francis talks about so many issues that are very relatable to UN staff. He talks about human rights and justice and eliminating poverty and climate change. And these are all huge UN agenda items. So people are very excited about him, whether they're Christians or Catholics or not, you know. He came this morning very poignantly, was greeted by the Secretary General, but with two children who presented him flowers. And they're the son and daughter of Jean-Philippe Laberge, who was a Canadian citizen who was serving with the United Nations in Haiti at the time of the 2010 earthquake, and he died. And his children are only 6 and 7 years old now, so they were obviously very tiny when their father died. And that was a very sweet moment. And Francis laid a wreath of white and yellow flowers, which are the colors of the Vatican, in honor of all fallen UN personnel. And he was very good about it. You know, this is the 70th anniversary year of the UN. And the pontiff, in his speech in the General Assembly, as well as when he spoke to staff, really thanked the UN for the work that it does in the difficult situations, in the difficult places. And he, you know, kind of gave them a little pep talk, I guess you could say, you know, urging them to go forward and keep doing their work. But at the same time, he also kind of scolded the Security Council and some of the big financial agencies who, you know, have dealt with economic crises and such, and the Security Council, which is divided over Syria and Ukraine and other protracted conflicts.
Margaret Bashir is the VOA United Nations correspondent. She comes to us from New York. And Margaret, as always, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ira.
Well, let's shift our attention back here to Washington and the White House, where President Barack Obama has said he and Chinese President Xi Jinping had agreed not to conduct or support cyber theft of business secrets. with Mr. Obama just a little while ago, delivering a blunt message to his Chinese counterpart that such espionage has to stop. Mr. Obama, in a Rose Garden news conference, said the agreement was progress, but he added that, "I have to insist our work is not yet done." Mr. Xi, for his part, agreed that the countries would not knowingly support cyber theft and promised to abide by norms of behavior in cyberspace. He said confrontation and friction are not the right choice for both sides. Now, both countries are claiming they don't engage in cyber theft of commercial secrets, one of the deep differences that have threatened ties between the world's two largest economies. Overall, President Obama said the two leaders' state visit had yielded an extremely productive meeting, adding that their candid conversations on areas of disagreement helped us to understand each other better. On the thorny issue of China's disputed territorial claims, which have unnerved some U.S. partners in Asia, she said China has the right to uphold our own sovereignty, but he promised respect for freedom of navigation and overflight. Turning their attention to climate change, an area where the two countries have been cooperating, China said it will commit $3.1 billion to help developing countries reduce carbon emissions, one of a series of measures taken with the U.S. to combat global warming. A joint statement listed a series of measures taken to flesh out their pledge made last year to work to reduce emissions. The U.S. earlier had pledged $3 billion to a United Nations fund to aid developing nations reduce emissions. Mr. Xi, speaking through a translator, called on the U.S. and China to be broad-minded about differences and disagreements. He made no specific mention of the controversial issues Mr. Obama had raised. The White House's concerns over China's cyber attacks in the U.S. have caused particular strain ahead of Mr. Xi's visit. Obama has faced calls from some Republican presidential candidates to scale back the grandeur of Xi's visit, which includes an Oval Office meeting, which has taken place, a joint news conference in the Rose Garden, and for later today, a glitzy black tie dinner at the White House. This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Let's move to something happening on Capitol Hill. The Republican Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, John Boehner, is going to resign from Congress, give up his seat at the end of October. VOA congressional correspondent Cindy Sain is in the studio with us. Cindy, thanks for making the trip from Capitol Hill into the studio. Boehner is one of the most powerful politicians in Washington. How much of a surprise is his resignation?
It's actually stunning. None of us were prepared. Even some of his closest members, some Congressman Dent and others who were in his inner circle, said that they were absolutely surprised. This, of course, coming on the heels of the historic visit on Thursday by Pope Francis to Congress, which was a tremendous accomplishment for Speaker Boehner, who had invited him. And Speaker Boehner said, for a little Catholic boy like him, this was really big stuff to have the Pope. And he got to meet with the Pope one-on-one, and Speaker Boehner was exceptionally emotional during the speech in the chamber, afterwards out on the West Balcony, just sobbing and with a very sort of pained look on his face. Of course, now some of us are saying, maybe there was more going on than just the Pope being here.
Well, to catch everybody up on what is going on, Mr. Boehner has been under a lot of pressure from the right wing of his Republican Party on a number of issues. He was involved in meetings today trying to arrange a compromise with his conservative opponents to avoid a possible action that could result in a shutdown of most federal government operations next week when funding runs out, all over the funding for Planned Parenthood. What does all that mean to the process? What do you hear? Why did this happen?
What I'm hearing is that Speaker Boehner said that this turmoil, he'd been facing challenges, as you would say, from his most conservative members. Speaker Boehner came into power in 2010 on the wave of the so-called Tea Party, fiscal conservatives coming into Congress in large numbers. And that brought him, gave him the speakership, but it's also been a constant thorn in his side that these members have on several issues, on health care, on refugees at the border with Mexico, these Republican members have threatened to not fund the government and cause a partial shutdown. And we were about to have that happen and play out again for the 1st of October. And what I'm hearing is that some are describing it as the speaker fell on his sword, saying we will get a so-called clean spending bill with no strings attached, and he will resign at the end of October, both as speaker and as a member of Congress.
So does this move the House of Representatives further right because of that?
That is an excellent question, Ira, and we'll have to see now. There will be sort of we don't know if there's a so-called heir apparent, if there's someone that Speaker Boehner has designated. Some are saying Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy, he's a little more in the middle. I think he might be a bit more palatable to the very conservatives as Speaker Boehner, but he's not known as being a radical in any way. So we'll have to see what happens now. There's going to be most likely a vote for the next speaker and different people vying, different parts of the Republican Party, which is kind of having an internal war among itself. Different parts will be vying for that next leadership post.
Cindy Sain is VOA's congressional correspondent. As always, Cindy, thanks for being with us.
Pleasure.
Joining me here in the studio now, as he always does, is our social media editor, Andrew Pelchevsky, with a look at what's trending today. Andrew, I guess what we had just been talking about, Cindy and I, is making some hay, as we used to say many years ago on social media.
Absolutely. Boehner is actually one of the top trending topics worldwide, as John Boehner takes to the press podium right now as we speak, talking about his resignation decision. So a lot of people on social media reacting to that, some saying good riddance. It's what Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic leader, said. She said, he was an ineffective speaker and couldn't really control his caucus.
Isn't politics in the United States so nice?
Yeah, well, the nice thing, and this ties into another trending topic, President Obama at the press conference with President Xi of China, somebody asked him about their resignation of Speaker Boehner, and he said, he's a great man, he's a patriot, he loves America, he serves his district well. So President Obama had some really nice words, and I think that might be because President Obama realizes that the next speaker might be a little more further to the right than Speaker Boehner. Speaker Boehner was, very cordial and conciliatory and willing to work with the president. And they had very different opinions, but he was willing to work with him at least.
And they were golfing buddies, too.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So he doesn't have his golfing buddy anymore.
Right.
So those two stories between Speaker Boehner and President Xi's visit are trending. Then you have the UNGA, of course, and Pope Francis appearing there. That's a big topic, talking about climate change. A lot of people supporting his message and just thrilled with his visit, continuing to track that on social media. And then the reason we were talking about just before we went on, FIFA, hashtag FIFA, is trending now because the Swiss Attorney General of their Justice Department is going to investigate Sepp Blatter further into his activities. So it's on social media, a great excuse for people to share their favorite Sepp Blatter photo, which was when he was at a conference and a protester threw all this fake money up in the air. So you have this picture of Sepp Blatter surrounded by falling currency. So people are sharing that photo and saying good riddance to Sepp Blatter. So whoever said Friday was a slow news day, today is evidence that they are sorely mistaken.
Not today. That's a busy Andrew Pelchevsky, social media editor here at Voice of America. And this indeed is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Snapping photos of yourself or selfies with your smartphone or digital camera has become an incredibly popular thing to do in this age of social media. Selfies are so big right now that there's even a tool called the selfie stick, which allows you to take pictures of yourself from beyond arm's length. But according to an eye-catching article in the Condé Nast Traveler magazine, more people have died from taking selfies than being attacked by sharks this year. To snap that ultimate cool selfie, a lot of people are putting themselves into dangerous situations. So far this year, there have been 8 confirmed deaths from shark attacks, but at least 12 people are known to have died from selfie-related activities. Unconfirmed reports make that total even higher. So, be sure to think about safety when you take your next selfie. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. U.S. environmental regulators have said today they are sending a letter to all automobile manufacturers saying they're stepping up emissions testing activities in response to Volkswagen's alleged violations of pollution laws. Volkswagen, if you haven't heard, could face $18 billion in fine just from the EPA in the United States after it admitted using software in its diesel cars that evades emission test. And this week, Volkswagen said 11 million cars were fitted with engines that had shown a noticeable deviation in emission levels between testing and road use. Joining us on International Edition is Dave Cole. He is chairman of Auto Harvest in Ann Arbor, Michigan, former chairman of the Center for Automotive Research, and a guy who knows a lot about cars. Dave, welcome. What does this mean for the auto industry as a whole?
I think it means a great deal in the sense that every car today, whether it's diesel or electric, has very complex control systems. Software is everywhere. Electronics are fundamentally important. And what this means with the case at VW, where there was an intentional approach to sort of separate when the car is being tested from when the car is being driven. And of course, in diesel engines, when you lower the NOx, the nitrogen oxides, which are part of the standards, you tend to have a negative impact on both fuel economy and performance. I think, in my opinion, that most of the manufacturers that I deal with, they're well aware of this and would be very reluctant to do anything that would, in a sense, try to cheat on the rules that have been provided by EPA. But we'll see, and I think it's appropriate that there is a deep investigation to make sure that more tricks aren't found. It's one of those things that has happened and I think is going to be a lesson, obviously a very expensive lesson for Volkswagen, but it's also a message to everybody that ultimately you cannot cheat in this game. If you talk about, we've seen, for example, overstatement of fuel economy that didn't really match up with tests. There have been fines associated with that. The emissions issue, we've had situations in the past. This is a really big deal. And the first day that we saw this, when we looked at the financial impact on VW, the stock, it told you, I don't think this story is going to go away very quickly.
David Cole is chairman of Auto Harvest and former chairman of the Center for Automotive Research, and he joins us from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Thanks, Dave. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support of Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that afflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Verdi's opera Otello is renowned for its challenging vocals. For over a century, finding anyone to sing the lead part has been challenging. Now, finding a black singer to portray the jealous Moor of Venice was next to impossible. And so an unfortunate theatrical tradition was born. White tenors wearing blackface to play Othello. But even opera must change with the times, and as Jeff London reports, the New York Metropolitan Opera's current production of Othello is the first in which the white singer performing the title role will not be wearing makeup to darken his complexion.
When Othello premiered at La Scala in Milan in 1887, the great Italian tenor Francesco Tamagno sang the role in blackface. And ever since the debut, great tenors have been darkening their skin to play the part.
I do not know of a black singer singing Verdi's Othello in a major opera house ever.
University of Michigan professor Naomi Andre is co-editor of the book Blackness in Opera. She says the wickedly difficult music makes the role tough to fill.
I really believe we should have that opera performed, and hence we're going to need to make a decision about how do we handle the black element of that role.
Verdi's opera is based on Shakespeare's play about a North African general who becomes a war hero and tries to fit into high white society in Venice. Bartlett Scheer directs the current Metropolitan Opera production. He says he never even considered having his Otello wear blackface.
It seems to me, as an artist growing up in America, that there'd be no way on earth I could possibly figure out how to do it with that kind of makeup.
Scheer's production stars Latvian tenor Alexanders Antonenko as Otello.
The role of Otello is one of the toughest tenor roles in the world, and there only are one or two singers in the world today who can even sing it on the large stage of the Met successfully, and we cast the best one available.
Metropolitan Opera General Manager Peter Gelb points out that the Met, like many opera companies, has had a colorblind casting policy for over half a century.
The Met has historically featured, you know, some of the greatest black artists of all time here, from Marian Anderson to Leontine Price to Jesse Norman to Kathleen Battle.
Black women have had an easier time landing top opera roles than have black men. And there's a reason, says Professor Naomi Andre.
Seeing a black male singer on stage with a white female heroine, there would be anxiety that a lot of people could feel in days of segregation, even in post-segregation times, but where racial tensions are still very much around.
Also, the classic European art form, which began in Italy at the end of the 16th century, has not offered many black role models until recently.
A lot of times with African American or black singers, there's a feeling of, well, I don't see a lot of people looking like me on stage.
But times are changing, Andre says, pointing to African American opera stars like bass baritone Eric Owens and tenor Lawrence Brownlee. And other countries, like South Africa, which has a special program to develop opera singers, are contributing to the trend. For VOA News, I'm Jeff London in New York.
That is our program. Thanks so much for being with us. My name's Ira Melman. Make sure you visit our website at voanews.com. A lot of things happening today. Keep up with it. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Elections officials in Burma have completed the process of examining the eligibility of more than 6,000 candidates who applied to compete in national elections set for November 8th. Political hopefuls representing the Southeast Asian nation's more than 90 political parties and over 300 independents submitted candidacy applications for Parliament's 1,171 seats. The process was long and complicated, and as decisions have been announced on who will be on the ballot and who won't, it also appears inequitable as well. Burma's Union Election Commission, or UEC, rejected approximately 100 candidates who submitted applications, with over half of the cases rejected on citizenship grounds. An ethnic Rohingya Muslim from Rakhine State was disqualified because he allegedly didn't meet the citizenship criteria, despite serving in the Union Parliament since 2010. The United States is concerned about the candidate disqualifications and is watching the situation closely. Almost all Muslim candidates were reportedly disqualified, but authorities have yet to provide the specific reasons why they didn't meet the citizenship criteria. parties may not submit a new candidate to replace one who has been disqualified, severely disadvantaging smaller political groups. These elections are vitally important for Burma's people and its future. But there are concerns about the constitutional provision that reserves 25% of parliamentary seats for the military and the disenfranchisement of temporary registration certificate holders. The move to disqualify candidates through an opaque and discriminatory process risks undermining the confidence of the Burmese people and the international community in these elections. We urge the Burmese authorities to redouble their efforts to address these concerns transparently and ensure that the upcoming elections constitute a step forward for the country.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage.